still broadcasting.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, we're not on the record right now, but we need to have a little bit of a discussion about how we're going to proceed. This hearing's running a little bit longer than everyone expected. And based upon this, council's advised me and the other parties agree that probably the 1 o'clock is not going to get completed today. So it was suggested that we push on with this case, finish it, and then at the 1 o'clock time slot, we'll still be doing this case. But we will also bring in, apparently there's a RTC portion at the 1 o'clock hearing that we will consolidate into this hearing. We'll continue the 1 o'clock to another date, and then go with the 3 o'clock hearing. And yes, I need...
Can I make one clarification?
Yes.
The suggestion was to finish this hearing, conclude it, and then unconsolidate the second... There's 1 RTC hearing for the combined case at 1 o'clock, unconsolidated with those, which the remainder are MDU cases, and hold a separate hearing on that 1 RTC case, which would be the same witnesses, but obviously it's only one break, so it would take less time.
Judge, I think from my standpoint, I like that approach. My only preference would be that we finish up Mitch's side of the case, take a break for lunch, a half an hour break for lunch, and then start with Mr. Lindbergh's portion of this first case and then proceed as you guys had outlined. So what would be the cases, which cases would be rescheduled, the MDU?
Certainly the MDU 1 o'clock cases, which are 886. PU or GS-13-886, GS-14-229, PU-14-671. And then, quite honestly, all the witnesses for those cases are the same witnesses for the 3 o'clock hearing, too. I'm guessing my thought is we're probably not going to get done with these RTC cases till 3:30 today at the latest. I would suggest rescheduling all of the MDU cases for another separate day.
Including the 3 o'clock ones?
I would, yes.
Do we need to consult with MDU at all? Are they here? Is there an MDU attorney here?
Not in the... Well, there is, but it's Mitch's witnesses.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't had a chance to talk to them, but I'm just, they're all lined up. Everybody's available. There is one witness that's traveled down from Williston for it. But in the interest of presenting a full case and having Mr. Lindbergh present a full case, it's frankly just not going to get done without being really choppy and cutting questions short for everybody.
And so just to clarify, the case that would be unconsolidated would be... PU-14-134?
Correct.
And then we would schedule another one-day hearing to finish the MDU cases.
Yes.
Mr. Lindbergh, I haven't heard anything from you. How are you with this?
Yeah, if you want to put 134 in with this one, right?
I want to finish this one and then do 134 separately. By itself. But, practically it would be the same information one way or the other. We just can't, as a technical matter of law, we can't now consolidate it with this hearing. We can unconsolidate from the other ones, but we can't consolidate with this one. So we have to have a separate hearing. But.
And then do the other MDU all at once? Or yeah. Two separate hearings?
It might be like it was set up today. I think we could combine them, but what we would do is schedule a day for those hearings, and then either we'd have them each a separate hearing or still keep them combined. We could work that part of it out. But we could get them all done. One day is sufficient for the MDU hearings, even the way it's going now, but there's more witnesses for the MDU cases than there are even for the RTC cases because different people responded to each incident.
Okay.
If I could just throw up one question. So if we can finish something today, then we can deliberate on that and make a decision. That's the whatever. As long as we get to that, I'm okay with that.
And it sounds like we would finish two things today. We would finish one of the cases from the 1 o'clock and this today.
Yeah.
Randy, are you all right?
I'm all right. We'll set it set for, I'd like to hear from Mr. Lindbergh, because in fairness to him, he doesn't work with scheduling these. We're not talking about scheduling this for tomorrow or Thursday or something. There's legal, I don't know how, what the time frame is, what kind of a minimum amount, but we're, this is going to be out a while.
Recommendation would it be at least, it'd be at least 21 days from today.
Yeah, I'm, for that schedule, I won't be available until after March 5th.
Won't either.
Based on that 21 days, I won't be available till after March 5th to do the second hearing.
I'm fine with it as long as it's agreeable with all parties that we delay it.
So I'm hearing that you would want even more than 21 days.
Yes.
For the next hearing. And I assume council works with him in setting up the scheduling the hearing dates. Is that correct?
We did on this one.
Okay, so that, all right.
Okay. We could perhaps even do that later at the end of the day if Mr. Lindbergh can look at his schedule and all. I think that might be the best is the schedule while we're all here.
Although, Mr. Armstrong, will your witnesses be around?
One of them, well, is probably here, unfortunately for him, but...
Well, we can try it. We'll do our best and...
Okay.
All right, then. Is everyone ready to go back on the record? Okay, back on the record. Mr. Armstrong?
Call Victor Shook.
Mr. Shook, in North Dakota, whenever someone testifies in an administrative hearing, one of my responsibilities is to inform them of the penalties for perjury. Those penalties are up to $10,000 in fines and up to 5 years in prison, and it is a Class C felony. Understanding those penalties, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth here today?
I do.
All right. Mr. Armstrong, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I'll... move into Mr. Shook in a second, but I neglected to mention that when we were on a break, we did find the locate ticket for that section that the commissioners were asking about. I've shown Mr. Lindbergh a copy. We've agreed to stipulate to admit it as Exhibit 18. So I'd like to offer that and enter it at this time.
All right. It will be admitted. Go ahead, Mr. Armstrong.
Mr. Shook, what is your occupation?
I am a public utility analyst for the Public Service Commission.
Could you move just a little closer to the mic? Thank you. What do you do in that position?
Various public utility items, siting cases, rate cases, damage prevention is a big portion of that.
You've been assigned as advocacy staff in the cases we've discussed this morning?
Correct.
Is one of your roles in that process to... recommend a penalty if the violation is found?
Yes.
And are you recommending certain penalties in these cases based on the investigation and allegations that you've reviewed?
I am.
Could you walk us through what proposed penalties we're making and why?
Sure. So starting with case 13-877, I'm recommending a penalty of $1,000, and the breakdown of that $1,000 is $500, because it's the first incident we have of record for this excavator, and an additional penalty of $500 for the severity of the hit, since it was a cable, 24-fiber cable, that can serve a considerable number of customers.
I don't know if anybody else, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. Could you speak up?
Okay.
Sorry. So you said for 877, based on the severity of it and it being the first case, you're recommending $1,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Could you just walk us through the seven cases and
yep.
penalty you're recommending and why, please?
Yep. 878, recommending a penalty of $1,000. That is based on this is the second incident for this excavator. Kind of the what we've been trying to do, and as a matter of practice, is ratchet up that penalty by $500 per incident. So the first one we had $500. This one is $1,000 for the incident number. There's no additional penalty for the severity on this one. It was a four-fiber cable. Well, still a considerable hit. It's not as doesn't serve as large of a customer base as a 24-fiber, so we didn't decide on severity. So a $1,000 penalty was recommended.
Okay. How about for 870? Just if you could just walk through each case number and tell the penalty you're proposing and why.
Yep. 879. Similarly, we ratchet up the incident number to $1,500 in that case. We do not assess an additional severity penalty. This one was a copper hit, 25-pair cable. So, again, not as big of a customer base can be served by that, so we did not assign severity. So the recommended penalty is $1,500. In 880, the incident number is $2,000. Again, as I said, ratcheting up $500 per incident. For this one, we attach a severity penalty of $1,000 since it is a very large cable of 144 individual fiber strands. So with the addition of the 2004 incident number and 1,000 severity, we're recommending a total penalty of $3,000 in that case. For 881, we're up to $2,500 for the incident number. And in that situation, we are attaching a $500 severity penalty. This was a 75-pair cable, so getting up into a larger number of customer base that we served by that. So the total penalty recommended for 881 is $3,000. 882, almost identical to 881, ratcheting up to $3,000 now for the incident number, an additional $500 for the severity. Again, it's a 75-pair cable. So total penalty recommended is $3,500. And 883... is, again, we're ratcheting up incident numbers, $3,500, another $500 for the severity because it was another 75-pair cable. So the total recommended is $4,000 for that case.
That's all the questions I have.
All right, thank you. Mr. Lindbergh, do you have questions?
Can you go through 877 and 878 and 879? You're losing me. You're starting with 1,000 and then
So
start over again.
Sure. So 877, we'll kind of look at this at two sides. So we have the incident number and then we have a severity that we kind of been tacking on here. So if we just start out at the top, 877 is 500 for the incident number or for damage caused on that incident. So we have 500 on 877, 1,000 878, 1,500 879, and so on. We just add on 500 each time. Okay.
So that's total on those.
No. Per incident. So for case number 877, the incident number or the damage for that incident is $500.
Right.
The damage for incident 878 is $1,000. Okay. The damage for 879 is $1,500.
Okay.
And then for some of them, not all of them, we add on an additional severity penalty based on the customer base that could be impacted by that size of a cable hit. So in 877, in addition to the 500 damage penalty, there's a 500 severity penalty. 878 and 879 do not have severity penalties. 880 has a $1,000 severity penalty. 881, 500. 882, 500. And 883, 500. Is that kind of...
That's fine. Are you an expert in excavation techniques?
I am not.
Do you know anything about it?
I've dug a hole with a shovel before. That's about it.
You don't know what it takes to dig around a utility line or to keep it protected?
I know what's required by the law.
But you don't know what it takes in the field?
As far as running an excavator, yeah, in that scenario, I do not.
Okay. And you're employed by who?
By the Public Service Commission of North Dakota.
What's your employment status as you're a...
I'm a full-time salaried employee.
Okay. Do you have a degree?
I have a degree in accounting, bachelor's degree.
You familiar with any construction techniques?
Just some around the house type of stuff. I do some handyman work around my own house, but that's about it.
Where did these, the amounts, where did they start from? I mean, who, are they set by the commission?
Commission staff recommends a penalty.
Okay. Who arrived at these values?
Myself and the director of compliance, competitive markets, we discussed the penalty amounts.
That's all the questions I have.
All right, thank you. Ms. Jeffco-Sackel?
I just thought maybe I'd flesh out a little bit more what you're talking about with how your penalties are recommended as advocacy staff. Do you have some basic guidelines in the division about penalties? You maybe went over them when I had to step out for 1 second, but
We do. The law actually kind of specifies which items we kind of need to take into consideration.
What does?
Excuse me. Which items to take into consideration, the law does. Kind of the basis, the items that we generally take into account are the number of incidents for a particular excavator or respondent, the size of the pipeline or the power line or, you know, telephone line, whatever was hit, the size of it, the relative impact of that to the customer base, and kind of along with that, depending on what type of line hit it is, the potential for harm. You know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, some telephone cables in this case, but if it were, let's say, a gas line, there's potential for explosions, things like that. Again, the customer impact is another item that we consider. How long was the outage for a customer? And if there was a valid one-call ticket, if there, you know, in all seven of these cases, we do believe there was a valid one-call ticket, or we're not claiming that there was not. So we're not assessing any penalty for that. But for cases that do not have a valid one-call ticket, when the damage occurs, we recommend an additional penalty for that.
Okay, so for the ones that we're talking about in this case, I kind of heard you talking about two of those things. Mm-hmm. How many incidents were happening each time there was another incident? You were proposing another 500, is what I was hearing, right? Adding like 500. So if it was
right,
the third incident, you'd be up to 1,500 or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay. And then in a few of them, there was additional proposal because of the severity.
Correct.
Okay.
For the customer impact, essentially.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, do you have any questions?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you, Victor, for your testimony. Just a couple quick questions. To your knowledge, have people been injured or killed in North Dakota because excavators didn't follow the North Dakota one-call law?
Yes.
So it's a pretty big deal. People should follow the law?
Absolutely.
So why didn't you assign a higher value for severity? People lose telecommunication services. There's people that didn't have 911 services. Why didn't you do more for severity?
It's a fair point. I guess we hadn't, you know, at this time, at that time, I guess I was relatively new to the assigning penalties for these cases. I hadn't thought of that scenario until recently of the, someone losing 911 service. So absolutely, that's a very fair point.
But in this case, we're not aware of anyone else following a complaint saying because of the loss of service, they didn't have access to 911, so I want to close that loop too.
No, we're not aware of any such.
So the information filed by RTC just talked about loss of services. It didn't talk about critical services not being available and what might have happened.
Correct.
Just to clarify that.
Correct.
What's the largest fine you've ever recommended to the Public Service Commission for a single incident in your time?
$12,000.
And did the commission accept that?
Yes, they did.
And was that those fees collected?
Yes, they were.
So we have had a precedence of all the way from zero to 12,000.
Correct.
What's the max penalty that the commission can assign for each incident?
$25,000.
So if I do my math right, that means the commission would have available up to $170,000 that we'd be within law to fine for this case.
Correct.
Do you think we should fine the $175,000?
In my opinion, no.
Okay. So do you feel comfortable in that $17,000 is appropriate for this case?
Given the circumstances, I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Fedorchuk.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
If for some reason we were to find, after all that evidence is in, that let's say one or more of these cases, there is no violation, there's some real good reason for whatever happened, then is your recommendation that these are the penalties for each of these specific cases, or would it then ratchet down and that would be out, and so each of the subsequent ones would come down $500?
In theory, yes. I think you as the commissioners have the ultimate authority in setting what the penalty amount is. I mean, as part of this process, you could certainly ratchet the fines up as well as down. But yes, if one of these seven cases, you know, you were to find, you know, they were not in violation of the one call law, my recommendation would be to ratchet down that incident number penalty for the other cases relevant to it.
And I don't know how the cases got their numbers, but if they're not in order of how they occurred, that wouldn't really matter to you. Then you would reorder them or whatever. But the fact that the first case here was not the first case of a cut doesn't really matter. You're just suggesting that this order, that they, in whatever order we take them, that they elevate $500 each occurrence.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I don't know how to ask this other than to bring in my sample cases like I often do when I'm discussing things. But so we had these series of cases that occurred within, I guess I don't really know exactly the time, 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever it was. But I'm not really sure exactly the order of discussions or when the contractor was notified that they're going to be subject to paying for damages and being penalized and that sort of thing. So how would you respond if someone said, this is sort of like a basketball referee getting to the end of the third quarter and seeing guys shoving down in the lane and saying, that's a foul. I've seen you do this four or five other times, so that's five. You're out of here. And it's the first time anything has been said about it. That sure wouldn't seem fair to the basketball team. So how do we assess these until we have had a first case, found guilt and done a penalty, and then presume that from then on the next level of severity or the next level of whatever the term is for the additional offenses should take place? Explain that, please.
Sure. That's a fair assessment, but I guess in my opinion, after every one of these damages, the company was well aware of it because they had to call the operator, you know, RTC in all of these cases, to let them know that their facility has been damaged. In my opinion, you know, just, well, I guess it's not an opinion, but as part of the law, you know, so let's say, well, we don't have to say, the law states, part of its one-call damage provisions is if there is damage caused, then the law has been violated. And I guess in my opinion, the fact that there was damage caused at the end of the day, I mean, they may have very well been careful at some points, but they were not careful enough because at the end of the day, they caused damage. Whether that be by the track hoe, by a trench collapsing, you know, whatever the case may be, the law was violated because of the damage caused to the facilities, and they were very well aware of the damage in each situation because they called RTC to inform them of the damage to their facilities. So I guess that's my basis for not kind of using your scenario, which is like I said, is a fair way to look at it. You know, they're not being notified until they've done, you know, 7 or 10 or however many damages about the first one.
Okay, and you were here throughout the morning and heard the testimony, correct?
Correct.
So in the cases 882 and 883, where I've been unable to get a real good feel for exactly how far apart these are,
sure.
But I have been around backhoes enough to know that you could cut a cable and not really feel it. Since they occurred on the same day, are we sure that the backhoe operator would even have known by the time that the second one was cut that the first one had been cut?
I guess we're not sure. I'm inclined to believe they're separate incidents, just because of RTC's cable cut incident reports that they complete. Generally, people don't like filling out paperwork, in my opinion. I don't like doing it, but it's a necessary evil of most jobs. And there were two separate cable cut incident reports completed for each of these.
I have no other questions.
All right, thank you. Mr. Armstrong, any follow-up?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lindberg, any follow-up?
Just a couple of things. Without all the testimony we have just heard the view of one side. How can you say the law was violated when you haven't heard both sides? You're hearing one side.
Well, I've heard one side, but I've also read the responses that I received from Northern Excavating, which states that the line was damaged by a trench collapse. And while I don't necessarily believe that that's the cause of the damage, after speaking with RTC, what I do know is either of those scenarios has the facilities damaged, RTC's lines cut or broken, and either of those scenarios is a violation of the one-call law.
But there was no law violated by the one-call law by any negligence of not calling one call.
Not so. There was no violation. So there is a valid one-call ticket for every one of these of these seven cases. You're correct. There's a valid one-call ticket.
So, you combined seven cases, or a lot of cases into seven cases when, there's two that occurred on the same day. Several that were within just real close proximity of each other that should have been possibly evaluated to a different extent.
How so? I guess I'm...
just like Mr. Christman was saying, he's not getting a good grasp on 882 and 883. And being this is the first time ever that contractor's been involved in this, of not, trying to come to a conclusion of, the circumstances around each and everything. So.
Okay. So what's the question, I guess?
Basically how it, got combined into seven separate cases.
Because we believe there were seven separate incidents. is why there were seven separate cases for each of them for these items.
But there was no correspondence to the contractor.
The contractor corresponded with RTC. So,
on a good faith effort, right?
Well, to let them know that their facilities have been
on a good faith effort, right?
I guess you could call it that. I mean,
okay,
it's required.
That's a yes.
Law.
A yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I have.
Ms. Sacco.
We have no questions.
Commissioner Call.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of follow-ups. We talked earlier when I asked you about you've recommended fines of $12,000, and that's been taken care of. Have you ever recommended that after your review of a case that the commission not do no action because you feel that sometimes things just happen?
Correct.
So you've recommended from the commission take no action, the commission fine $12,000.
I've recommended the commission close cases because there wasn't sufficient evidence to prove a violation. I've recommended $0 penalties or different things of that nature. But yes, so.
Sure. So, okay. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Fordo.
No other questions?
I guess just one clarifying question. Your recommendation is based upon the commission actually finding their violations.
Correct.
You haven't made a conclusion, but you're just recommending. That's their job to make the determination about right. The violations.
My belief is there was violations, but ultimately, obviously, it's their decision.
Right, and if there are those violations, then that's your recommendation for the fines.
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Armstrong, anything else?
That was all I had. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Lindberg, anything?
No.
Nothing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone. Now, do you have any other witnesses, Mr. Armstrong?
No other witnesses.
Mr. Lindbergh, do you have witnesses you wish to call?
Yes, I'd like to call two witnesses.
Okay, and I guess the question is, should we take a break before we start your case, or I'm seeing many heads nodding.
Yep, let's take a half an hour
and be back here about 12:45 then. Thank you, everyone.